Welcome to Not Another Marketing Podcast, where we're talking to reputation and crisis communication expert Jeff Hahn about dealing with and also preventing a social media crisis. And there's been quite a few of those, haven't there? Before we get started, I want to quickly mention that Jeff has a new book out. It's called Breaking Bad News, 12 Essential Crisis Communication Tools. It almost acts as a little bit of a guide for brands dealing with crisis communication. It's a great read for any brand manager or social media manager. You can find the book at breakingbadnewsbook.com. That's breakingbadnewsbook.com. At the end of the podcast, there's also a voucher code and a little bit of a limited offer for you, so make sure you listen out for that. Can I also quickly mention that Not Another Marketing Podcast is totally ad-free, and I'd love to be able to keep it that way as well. If you can give the podcast a quick shout-out on social media, that would be fantastic. Or subscribe using your favourite podcast app. It's on iTunes and Spotify and Stitcher and all sorts of different places. If you find the podcast really, really useful, you can also support it by buying me a coffee on the website. It's jtid.co.uk/podcasts. That's jtid.co.uk/podcasts. Right, let's get on with it. Now, the first thing I asked Jeff was to explain a little bit more about what reputation management is.
Yeah, thanks, John. I'm really pleased to be on your podcast. And I hope this subject of reputation management is useful to your listeners. It's one of those areas of communication that's not really well thought of. I didn't say that quite right, but it's not thought of much. We often don't think about our reputation, especially as marketers or when we're thinking about, hey, what kind of information can I put out on social media? Because typically it's associated with crisis communication. And that's generally where I spend most of my time in crisis communication work for brands who are experiencing a reputation challenge. And reputation is really interesting. It's typically associated with a breach of social norms. And it's public. Those are the two variables that combine to create a reputation challenging situation.
What is it about social media that makes us want to mess things up?
Well, social media is an intense amplifier, isn't it?
Yeah.
It takes even small issues and turns them into major breaches of trust or breaches of social norms. The interesting part about social media that I find to be both a blessing and a burden is that people can provide their own perspective, but because it's anonymous to a great extent, the provision of other perspectives is sometimes diluted by what we would refer to as trolls, people who simply are bomb throwers, rhetorical bomb throwers, and not interested in creating positive or even productive conversation. Where that can happen, you can learn a little bit from social media. Oftentimes it's bogged down by people who, or contributors, or even, by the way, we should acknowledge that much of social media is ganged up on or into by chatbots, robots now. And so these things tend to find any kind of issue tends to find traction and amplify to an extent that minor issues prior to social media may not have gotten any notice. So it's a fascinating amplification chamber. It can be an instructive perspective place if you're interested in learning about how does this issue affect other people, or how do people react to that particular subject. But oftentimes it's simply noise and volume for the purposes of creating more controversy.
Do you think it's the throwaway aspect of social media encourages this in a certain way? Because I know quite sane, normal social media managers who kind of like just suddenly had a great idea, posted it, and then half an hour later they realize it's not such a good idea.
I think you're right. There's a disposability to it. You send out a tweet and don't think twice about it, right? Yeah. There's this feeling like, I'm just going to say that and nobody will care. But there's going to be one of those where people do care, and boy, the pile on starts to happen and the amplification starts to take effect. I think you're right. There is a casualness to it that sometimes prevents us from having a proper filter.
Do you think CEOs and management should kind of maybe get their posts approved before posting?
I'd go one step further. I don't think they should be posting at all.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
I spent 30 years in reputation management and crisis communication, and this is an arena where CEOs, unless they have a really interesting thought leadership position and are very strong in that belief set and that idea set that they're conveying to the audience and they stick to it. My advice to those who are running organizations is to allow your social media team to speak for your brand. If you have a different thought leadership platform where you're speaking for a cause or you're part of another initiative that may not be associated with your brand, that's interesting. That's different. And that actually makes you a more interesting person because you're interested in others. In terms of repping your own brand and being on social media, I'm not a fan. I typically discourage it unless there's a really acute need for it. That's the province of comms professionals and the rules that they can install to govern the social media conversations, tone, language, and escalation associated with any brand.
How do you have a conversation with CEOs and management? So if you're a social media manager, if you're a brand manager within an agency or a company, and you know that your CEO is doing a little bit of damage. And let's face it, the CEO, there's quite a few out there who actually think they're a little bit more important than they really are. They should just stick to CEOing, shouldn't they, really? How do you have that conversation with the boss to say, you know, let us do this?
Because I spend a lot of time in food and the food industry and food business, it's not difficult for me to go back through a few years of news articles about recalls or stumbles or fumbles of some kind associated with a CEO quote. And I pull these quotes out and even have video clips of them and show. I've got a whole slide deck that I'll use to show the level of risk that they are opening their brand to, because they're not abiding by or using a highly controlled social media plan and thought process. And so that conversation about risk is really an eye-opener for most. They don't understand that they can, in fact, open their brand up for legal liability or for consumer criticism that they're really, truly not ready to respond to nor receive. They'll be shocked by it all, in fact. And so walking them through risk conversations tends to get more attention than, hey, you know, this would be better for you to let somebody else handle. It's, here's the liability you're creating.
I've got you. Do you think it's a good idea to have some sort of strategy in place that you've written down before we start entering into the social media world on behalf of a company?
I certainly do. And in fact, when we take on a client, even on the promotion side of our business, we oftentimes establish a social media playbook. And the social media playbook, especially important on the reputation side, has typically three levels to it. And the levels are thresholds. If there's a distressing or difficult issue that's being talked about, level one is a monitoring level. Just watch. Let's see where this issue goes, how the community of contributors is shaping the narrative, shaping the conversation. You know, oftentimes if you're patient, even a difficult or challenging issue can fizzle out. And that's a good thing. We want it to just fizzle out. Tomorrow there's going to be worse news about something else, someplace else, and you let the news cycle do its job for you. In level one, you're monitoring, but you're also paying attention to misinformation. If you cross the threshold and say, you know what, we don't like this issue being talked about in terms of our brand, And there are things that are blatantly wrong. There's misinformation that is obviously not true. Then in threshold, as you cross the threshold into level two, you can make the decision as a brand to acknowledge, hey, this is a difficult and challenging issue. Let's make sure that we're using factual information. And in level two, you can correct at certain moments clearly misrepresented information or blatant disregard for the truth. That's a challenge, though, because once you get in, you can't get out. You have to stay in the conversation. And that gets you perhaps to level three. In your social media plan, level three is active conversation. You are going to engage the social media community that's talking about you or your issue or your brand actively and repeatedly. It's not just a correction of information. It is you are going on the offense. And that's going to need to continue. You're going to have to devote resources, mostly time, but also an escalation in executive involvement if you choose to move through into level three across that threshold. So we like to help clients understand those three thresholds, the risk involved with moving up that ladder, and also the reason why you would want to move up that ladder in case, from a reputation management standpoint, you're really getting smeared around. And so that's the kind of planning. It's more like guidelines versus set messages. Hey, if this happens, say this. That's too prescriptive. But guidelines for how we behave and when we engage are typically quite welcomed by clients.
Do you think your social media strategy should cover things like attitude as well and the style of speech that you use and maybe things as bizarre as which types of charities the company supports and that, just to try and protect yourself?
Oh, for sure. When we think about the strategic decisions that a brand makes, that a company makes, using social media to actually amplify those choices and what you stand for is really key. The era that we see us moving into, it's not something that we invented, but we see the data and the demographic change into how consumers are becoming much more belief-driven buyers, meaning they'll support a brand and they'll buy a product because they see that brand as aligning with their own beliefs about how the world should work, about the causes that they hold dear, and how they believe a brand should support those causes. Social media is one of the fastest ways, the most efficient way, to continue to talk about how a brand is in alignment with its consumers. And we see belief-driven buying as a phenomena really getting its momentum through social media channels. Talk about a few examples. There are, here in the States, there's a company called REI. They do all kinds of outdoor outfitting, hiking gear, kayaking. If you want to go out in the wilderness, you go to REI and you get all the clothing and the gear and the camping tools, etc. Well, REI has a vested interest in promoting and protecting national parks, open spaces. They want people to get out and enjoy the world. Of course, their gear, their clothing, helps make that possible. Well, REI has moved into an advocacy role, and now they will at times place ads and use social media very effectively to argue or give a voice to the protection of national parks. So you'll find them putting full-page ads, for example, in the Washington Post or New York Times. These full-page ads will be admonishments to whatever administration is in the White House at the time to do a better job of protecting parks, do a better job of protecting sacred lands or wilderness areas, etc. And so here we've got a brand now that is moved from retailer, hey, I'm going to sell you some great gear so you enjoy the world, Now that brand is using social media and advertising paid in order to advocate for the same things that their customers love. And this is a really interesting phenomenon, and I think fueled terrifically by social media, where brands are now expected to take a leadership role in on issues, climate change, for example, national park preservation, that their customers believe in. So really fascinating time to be a brand and to be feel like you have to move out in front of your customers and almost lead a parade to advocate for issues that are important to your customers.
But of course, doing that leads to much more trolling and problems on social media and people who disagree with you.
Absolutely. And that's, there you go. You've just crossed the threshold to a certain extent of being a promoter of good things. Like we hope that everybody gets out and enjoys the outdoors. Now you're an advocate. And that line of promotion to advocacy means that you open yourself up to more criticism. Yeah. Now your social media plan has to respond to that. And you've got to have in your possession a guide that helps you ignore trolls, respond to responsible commentary, even if you don't agree with it, and then continue to advocate for your position. You're pushing yourself out into the public square with a microphone, so you have to be ready to give and receive.
Yeah, absolutely. So what do we do about trolls? I mean, Twitter particularly. If I've got my notepad in front of me at the moment, which I'm making notes on as we're talking, and I'm using a black pen, and I'm sure if I took a photograph and put it on Twitter and said, here's my notes in black pen, somebody would come along and say, no, that's blue, that's a blue pen. Just for the hell of it, just for fun. There are people out there who do this almost just, they're mischief makers, aren't they? So should we ignore them? Should we reply to them? Should we be cheeky back to them?
Our advice almost all the time is to ignore and move on. You could provide some very blatant pushback against, again, if it's outright lies or misinformation, just designed to hurt. You can make a decision to have a one-time response. But, you know, this phenomena of trolling isn't new. We used to call it gossip. Yeah. It's come online now in the form of this really mean-spirited type conversation. Since it's not productive, I think people, especially those who are trying to engage productively in a conversation, know to just ignore it and move on. We're getting more and more used to it, but it is, I want to acknowledge, it is pretty distressing. If you're on the receiving end of it, it'll keep you up at night. There's no right way to address it. And, you know, the most prolific Twitter user here in the U.S., the President of the United States, even he gets accused of posting inappropriate commentary just yesterday. And I think Twitter has moved to sanction some of his posts because they're blatantly not true. So it's a really fascinating case study in power and the way that we respond in the public marketplace of ideas. I don't know the right answer. I tend to help clients understand, hey, brush that off, keep on moving. Stay focused on what you believe and continue to move through both promotion and advocacy based on that focus of a higher plane, get to higher ground rather than get sucked down into the swamp.
I remember doing a talk back in, I think it was around 2010, 2011, saying that there will come a point, and I think we're getting to that point now, where the social media networks like Facebook and Twitter and YouTube that they need to decide whether they're a technology platform or whether they are a publisher.
Well, that's a fascinating fork in the road, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that they know. I don't think they've made that distinction. The trend that I think I'm seeing is that they want to be both. But if I'm guessing, my prediction meter would tell me that they're going to move towards being much more of a technology platform if they had to choose between the two. But it is this publishing game, the open platforms that they've provided to that brought all these voices into one place, that they're still addicted to a great extent.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, as soon as you come out and say, I'm a publisher, then you line yourself up to have to abide by a completely different set of rules.
Different set of rules, you're exactly right, yeah.
I get asked by some people what they do with Facebook posts that people have posted on their page that they don't like or that could lead to trouble and conversations that maybe that brand doesn't want to enter into. Should we just delete them? Because then you can end up in a situation where people are grumbling at you for censoring them.
Oh, absolutely. You have to be mindful of, again, your role in the public exchange of ideas. I think what brands have to be ready for, if you get an ugly Facebook post, they have to be ready to respond to it in public. And that, again, that's a reputation challenge. It's a violation of social norms in public. And allow others to join that conversation. So what you're really doing is moving into a role where you're inviting friends and allies to come and swamp bad commentary or untrue commentary. You've decided to move into the online space onto Facebook, and so you have to live with that decision and stay in that game. If you do get into the censorship game, like you've talked about, John, you've got all kinds of trouble. What happens in my experience with brands who do actively censor is that they attract news. The news media then comes in and tries to find out what's going on, what are you trying to hide, what's the controversy, etc. And you've done yourself an even worse disservice by attracting another amplifier. So that game of censorship has to be played super carefully. And in fact, the best laid guidance there is that you just don't do it. You know what? If someone wants to make a comment, you can respond to it in public on the Facebook feed. You can also ask a person, hey, if you've got a challenge, why don't you direct message me and we'll take the conversation in a different direction. That's been one of my favorite tactics for clients is you're getting challenged or you're getting confronted in a public space like Facebook. Hey, just DM those people and put it on the feed. Hey, we are very interested in what you're talking about. Sorry to hear you had a bad experience. Not sure we agree, but let's talk about it. Why don't you DM me here, etc. That invitation's pretty hard for a reasonable person to resist.
So sort of winding up, when a brand is about to post anything, really, it could be just a brand message, it could be some sort of advocacy, do you think we need to spend a little bit more time concentrating on what we're actually saying and trying to make sure that it's 100% bulletproof before we actually post it?
Well, it's always a challenge, isn't it? Because anything can be misconstrued or twisted around. At the same time, brands have to be authentic. And so if all you're posting is super sanitary comments or rainbow and unicorn pictures, you're not interesting. You're actually not serving your brand well. And so I think what we have to plan for is simply that, hey, we're going to stand for something. And not everyone might agree. Okay, that's just fine. There's a courageousness to being a brand and having a brand that people fall in love with because you have to just admit others will not. And that may invite criticism. It may invite trolling. It may invite all kinds of other ancillary communications that wear you out. But that's the risk and reward of working in this kind of medium, in the public space, on Facebook, Twitter, or other social media feeds.
So it's try not to be too vanilla and maybe a little bit more strawberry, but realize that not everybody likes strawberry.
Yeah, that's it. Unfortunately, you're not supposed to try to be liked by everyone in the world. Great brands focus on a customer base that they believe in, that the customer base believes in the brand, and that is the relationship that matters. How others feel who may not relate to that brand perfectly, you just have to let it go.
You mentioned just before we started the interview, you've got 46 boxes of your new book turning up. So I've got to ask you about your book because you're going to have a bit of, you know, you're going to need to make some space, aren't you?
Today's the day. We're supposed to see a truck drive up to the office in about an hour. The book is called Breaking Bad News, 12 Essential Crisis Communication Tools. And what I've talked about in Breaking Bad News, it's taken me 7 years to write it, and over 30 years of practice in this reputation management arena, crisis communication as another way of saying it. What I've essentially outlined is, if a brand can do five things, and five things really well in sequence, they can manage and navigate through a reputation challenge in a very short amount of time. And those five things aren't difficult, but they do take practice with particular tools. So I lay out not only the five steps, but the tools you use in each of the steps.
Where can we find you? Your website, your book, your social bits and pieces?
Yep. I'll love it if you'd visit breakingbadnewsbook.com. That you'll find the book, a description there, and you can even do a pre-order. This first group of boxes that's coming, they're all going to be books that I send out as thank yous to people who have visited the website and checked it out. So I'll give you a special promo code to convey to your listeners. Just use the promo code John, J-O-N, and when that promo code shows up, our fulfillment team will go ahead and send out a free copy of Breaking Bad News just because I've enjoyed being on your podcast so much.
Fantastic, Jeff. I really appreciate it. It's been really interesting talking to you, to be honest, because I love a good social media crisis because a lot seemed to happen. Thank you for your time.
It's been wonderful. I appreciate it. And my advice to all of your listeners is the same that I give to myself. Stay off social media.
Thanks again to Jeff for his time. Now, if you've really enjoyed this episode of Not Another Marketing Podcast, then please help me keep it ad-free by subscribing on your favorite podcast player or giving the podcast a quick shout on social media. That really, really helps. You can also buy me a coffee as well on the website, which helps keep the lights on. Go over to the website at jtid.co.uk/podcasts. That's jtid.co.uk/podcasts. Thanks for listening.